Well, Mark Green, thank you for being with us on the Resound Worship Songwriting Podcast.
Fantastic to be with you, as always, but particularly today.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you. And would you, if people don't know you, could you just introduce yourself?
Mark Green, grew up in a Jewish background, became a Christian last week at uni, went into advertising, so you can trust every word you hear from me. 10 years in advertising, loved it, loved the people, the pace, the creativity, yeah. And the lunches. And really, so, and then felt God saying, well, just I was turned onto the word of God, really.
Yeah.
By the people who were discipling me in New York, and I just thought, I'm going to go to theological college. And one of the things that happened to me there was I suddenly realized, I'm going off my bio, already drifting into content beyond bio. Anyway, I spent 9 years at theological college, two as a student, seven vice principal there, primarily teaching, engaging with culture, workplace ministry, communications, things like that. And then felt God say, well, compelled me really to join the London Institute for Contemporary Christianity.
Yeah.
Primarily because it was, in a sense, the only place that was focused on the thing that I was most focused on, which is how do we help ordinary people live out the Christian life in all of life, Monday through Sunday, at work, at the school gate, at the bowls club, bungee jumping, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm here.
That's your passion. So we're going to talk about Boundless. And we're going to encourage people to be thinking about writing boundless songs.
Yeah.
But maybe before we talk about that project specifically, give us a bit of the journey from, you know, what has LICC been doing with you? What's been this focus on kind of whole life disciple? What's been the journey there?
Well, the journey, you know, it's like many journeys. God does something in your own life.
Yeah.
And you learn about something that God, who he is and what he's like. And what I learned in advertising was that God, he answers prayer on a Madison Avenue advertising agency.
Yeah.
People get healed on the 10th floor of a Madison Avenue agency. Wow. In the middle of the day. Over time, people come to know Jesus.
Yeah.
He disciples you there. He, you know, character failures, tick. You know, career disappointment, tick.
Yeah.
Romantic catastrophes, tick, tick, tick. You know, all of that happens,
yeah.
And you see God working.
Yeah.
You see him working there. And you can't go back from that. Once you've seen the rich ways of God works in ordinary life, or can do. And I taught us an adult Sunday school class, one of the great gifts that the American church has on workplace ministry. And I think for me, when I saw that group of 25 people, ordinary folk really, they weren't all, you know, urban professionals, if you like, saw how fast they got it and the stories that came back from how God was working through them in everyday life. I suddenly thought, this is liberating. This is exciting when people realize that God is with them wherever they go and that actually he cares about it, they can pray about it, that he will intervene there. Wow. And then they've got a testimony, et cetera, et cetera. So I saw that, I came back and I went go to theological college and I suddenly realized no one is talking about this.
Yeah.
There's one man who's written a book in the last 10 years on workplace ministry. So you begin there. And for, you know, in worship terms, you know, I played the clubs and, you know, pubs to 10 people for quite a number of years talking about work. And then I came here and I realized that the problem wasn't that we weren't discipling people for work. The problem was we weren't discipling people for all of life, of which work is a subsection.
Yeah.
And that work could always be a divider. Although if you don't do that, you know your church isn't really helping you.
Yeah.
Because obviously work is more than paid work. But that's what we saw. And I suppose in 2003, suddenly, you know, the Lord put something on my heart. I mean, I know this has happened to you. You know, when the Lord, you know, you've, there are bright ideas and there are God ideas.
Yeah,
and he compelled me to write something called Imagine How We Can Reach the UK,
which
was essentially an essay published by the EA as their magazine. And what it said was, we're not going to get anywhere unless we make disciples.
Yeah.
And disciples is not converts.
Yeah, yeah.
Disciples is people who know how to live all of life with Jesus in their context at this time. And that has been the journey we're going on. And the reality is that most churches don't make disciples. Not whole life disciples. They make converts, they make belongers, they make people who know how to pray, but the notion that God is real, this God is big and he's interested in all of life, means that usually we don't really pay attention to all of life.
Yeah.
And the research backs this up. It's global. It doesn't matter whether you're a charismatic, conservative, you know, Pentecostal, Methodist, URC, independent, salt and light. The research backs it up across the things. Overall, somehow we've not really helped people in this as the scattered church to be fruitful for Jesus, not given an imagination for how God does that and how he can do it with them. So since 2003, that's the journey we've been on. We've been trying to work out how to do it in a local church. And then what happens is, as Sam and Sarah Hargreaves, the exalted ones, know, we do all
that out.
we do all this research, and we work with 16 churches because we didn't know how to do it ourselves. You work with people to learn things, which is, of course, what you're doing. You're, you know, in this, working with people to learn things together. So we learned a bit about how to get going. Neil Hudson wrote a great book called Imagine Church, and then one of the things we noticed was, of course, one of the most important things is, what is the content of our sung worship? How and indeed our spoken worship in the gathered context? And we realized there were very few songs that captured God's concern for all of life, God's concern for the detail of people's everyday lives, wherever they might be, that actually, if you like, help them to have an imagination for a God like that and for their places, and also, to, if you like, to sing it back to him. And so we asked a couple of people called Sam and Sarah Hargreaves to write a book and a study guide. And, you know, here's what to do if you're a worship leader stuff. On that, we pay them a huge amount of money. We did. Somebody gave us a huge amount of money for them to write a book. It's true.
Yeah.
They did. It wasn't on royalties. So I hope you'll buy a book. It's fantastic. But the point was, it was a need. How do we help worship leaders in whether, you know, you're two people in a small church or big band or whatever, how do you help people see the opportunity and lead people in this without it distorting life? So that's where we got to at that point, and we've trailed along the road trying to knock off all these barriers to the things that get in the way of whole life disciple making.
Does it feel like the sung worship is almost like, you know, people say your wallet is the last thing to get converted. Does it feel to you like the sung worship is the last bit to get converted to the whole life discipleship message?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that actually preaching is might be similar, in that one of the challenges of preaching is, I just give you the example. I was speaking on at a conference, one of the older ones called Keswick, a fantastic place to be. And I was doing something for the church leaders on reading the Bible with whole life eyes. And I did a little exposition of Ruth 2 and Boaz in the field. Now, one of the things about that is, you know, it's a rich passage, but one of the things about that is Boaz is the most outstanding manager. This woman comes into his field and he changes the way they do harvesting for her benefit. He sees that she's, he notices her, he makes sure she's got water, he invites her over for lunch, you know, the CEO eats with the cleaner, etc., etc., etc. It's a workplace. And yes, he's the kinsman redeemer, and he foreshadows in some ways Jesus, who is the great kinsman redeemer, and he's the great grandfather of David. And there are all those reasons to look at, but the scope of redemption is enriched when you see how this ordinary man, farmer, small businessman, whatever you call it, in this decadent era, is living out distinctively his faith and changing the culture around him. And what the preacher man said to me afterwards, he was the chair of Keswick, and he said, you know, I think you're right about that, but you know, if I'd seen it, I've never seen it, if I'd seen it, I wouldn't have preached it. And he said, what? He said, why? I said, because I couldn't find it in the commentaries. So when you're on the when you're on the edge of something fresh, and you've been taught, rightly so, by the way, if you have a new idea, as a preacher, check it out.
Because
if you've suddenly thought something no one has thought before, maybe it might not be right.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to, so that actually that was integrity on his part.
Mm.
It's high level of integrity. Mm. But it shows the barrier. The barrier is if you're a preacher, you're not going to find this kind of scope of application in the way that the Bible is taught.
Mm.
I'll give you one more example.
Yeah.
This is the killer. This is the killer for this podcast. It's the Psalms.
Yeah.
So, you know, David writes 73 of the Psalms. Fantastic. And in 73 of those Psalms, sorry, in 82%, in 60 of those Psalms, 82%, 60 of the Davidic Psalms mention the word enemies.
Mm.
And so the question is, why does David talk about enemies so much?
Mm.
Well, he talks about enemies because he's got them. Because he's a soldier, because he's an outlaw chieftain, because he's a general, because he's the king of Judah, then he's the king of Israel, and he's got enemies.
Mm.
So what is he talking about? He's talking about his 80% of his psalms, at least, are responses to a rather toxic workplace.
Yeah.
At root, the Psalms are a response to what's happening in David's everyday life.
Yeah.
Yes. So he's not a singer-songwriter in skinny black jeans. He is a soldier.
Yeah.
And there is a big difference between the Davidic Psalms and the Psalms of Heman, Asaph, Korah, and so on. And they almost divide half and half between the people, if you like, who are writing as the Levites who've been commanded by David to write and sing and, you know, play their lyres and their harps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But big difference in the sensibility.
Yeah.
And so for me, what that says to us is that we need songs that are coming out of, this is our book and it's our model. So what happened to you yesterday?
Mm.
What happened to you at the school gate?
Yeah.
What happened to you in your office?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there is a privilege, in a sense, for the singer-songwriter, worship leader, who is, in a sense, in that world, whatever their particular world is, and writing out of their experiences there and realizing that those things there are important to God.
Yeah.
That's the model that David offers us.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, what would you say if somebody said, yeah, but ultimately, worship is just about meeting with Jesus, it's about an encounter. You know, if you start mentioning the stuff of everyday life, work, politics, community, we're just distracting people from Jesus. Well, because to me, that, I don't know if people would say it in those words, but that's at least the impression that I get back in the pushback. How would you, you know, speak into that?
Ultimately, yes, I mean, we all want an encounter, but what is the nature of the God we're encountering?
Mm.
And what is the scope of that God's concerns?
Mm.
What are we praising him for?
Mm.
What are the mighty deeds of the Lord that we want to tell people?
Mm.
What do we want to pass on to the next generation? When David talks about, you know, several times in the Psalms, he says, tell of the mighty deeds of the Lord, tell, recount these, I will dance around the altar and tell these things and so on and so forth. And he's not talking about Sinai. He's not going back to Abraham or to the Exodus, you know, the Red Sea. Now, that he is in some of his imagery, but he's not, those are not the deeds he's talking about usually.
Yeah.
He's talking about things that have happened in his life.
Yeah.
So there's a sense of this God being alive, this God being interested in all of my life. So it's so this is the God I want to praise. And I think the you know, for me, if you like, those psalms are effectively psalms of testimony.
Mm.
And it seems to me that testimony is a spiritual discipline of praise and a spiritual discipline of encouragement.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we praise God for his mighty deeds, we are saying, you know, now, there is a difference, if you like. There are categories of songs, aren't there? There are songs where you're just praising. This is Jesus. This is what you've done on the cross. And by the way, because of what you've done on the cross, this is what you're doing today.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's those songs, and then there's songs of confession, and there's songs of here we go, songs of dismissal. And there are periods where we want to create a context in which people, if you like, can encounter God, a reflective context where, if you like, we drain out the noise. But I want to know that God is with me, and I want to, you know, in all of life, and I want to be able to grow more conscious of him in all of life. You know, my personal yearning is that, you know, a bit like Brother Lawrence, practicing the presence of God, as we learn to grow closer in community, together, corporately, which is a beautiful and special thing, also, we are hopefully also growing in our capacity to be closer to him when we're not together. So how does the one feed the other?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's what leads us. So, you know, you've done all this work with LICC. We did the whole life worship stuff. We were teaching that to churches. You were, you know, other people at LICC teaching that to churches. And then last year, where did the Boundless piece come into that?
Boundless piece is, you know, it's one of those joyous answers to a desire, if you like. So I think about 2007, somebody called Graham Kendrick, you may be familiar with him.
Yeah, he's all right, isn't he?
Yeah, the patriarch, as it were. So Graham invited me to speak to the songwriters. Don't know what they call it.
Songwriters consultation?
Consultation, conference, convocation, conclave.
Shindig.
Shindig, pandemonium. And he asked me to address this issue, and his concern at that point was whether we, the worship community, if you like, were perpetuating what he called an abstract spirituality. So it was connected to God, but not God connected to our world or us connected to God in our world. And so I actually looked at every song in the Spring Harvest songbook at that time, every single one, the big one, you may recall it.
I do.
You have used it.
Late Lamented.
Huge, great, so something like 780 songs in it, something like that. And then some more up-to-date things from that, because every song, and actually I couldn't find a single song, not that work with the issue, I couldn't find a single song on work. Even the section that said work and leisure, or leisure if you're American, well, you know, didn't really have anything on work. So that was the genesis. And he went away and wrote some songs as a result. Keith and Christine Getty had a conversation with them. They wrote, I think, hymns for everyday life as well. But, we, you know, that's a few people. So the yearning was that we would find some folk who were up for, actually, can we do something together that will begin to change the songbook, give people things to sing at church and on the way to work. Or on the way to the school gate, or on the way to wherever they're going in their day. So that's where Boundless came from. And, you know, it was David Leeds and you and Andy Flanagan making it happen, really.
Very much Andy Flanagan, I think, not me. but so what did you... Well, I was there, but for our listeners, you had this room full of some very well-known songwriters and worship leaders. We had some theologians, we had some LICC staff. And some, actually some grassroots up-and-coming songwriters as well. And you were the opening. How did you approach that in terms of trying to instill a fresh vision for songwriting and what it could be?
Well, the way I tried to do it, and you never know whether things are going to work till you've tried them, do you?
Nope.
was I gave everybody a little exercise in pairs. And I asked them to think of somebody who's not in church paid work, preferably for this exercise, not at home. So somebody, where are they right now? It was about 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Where are they right now? What are they doing? What are their challenges? What are their opportunities? And to talk to each other about that. To have that person in mind as you go through the next 2 days. What's going to help them? What vision of God will help them? What words will help them? What insight into challenge opportunity will help them? So everybody did that and chatted away. And then I gave, you know, probably a couple of examples of somebody that they might not think of doing something, in a sense, quite small, but also who thinks this way. Mm. One was a hairdresser called Victoria. Mm. I remember asking her. She was also a worship leader, as it happens, but she was 19 at the time. And I asked somebody, do you think if I ask her a sharp question, she'd be okay? And they said, yes, I'll ask her. So it's a room 300 people. So I said, you know, in your day job, you know, what do you do? I'm a hairdresser. How long have you been doing it? 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And you know, very encouraging, you know, very pressured to begin with. Yeah. You're a junior, you're doing this, you're doing that, washing hair, it's all got to be done fast, etc. And her vicar had prayed for her 3 weeks and commissioned her to this work, which was really beautiful. It's unusual, really beautiful. And then I said, so what difference does Jesus make to the way you wash someone's hair? And, you know, I think that's a terrible question to ask them if they're not ready for it. I must have been the Spirit. I've got it. It's my only excuse. And she, quick as a flash, said, well, I pray for them as I massage in the conditioner. And it blew everybody away.
Yeah.
Because she'd found a moment. Specifically, I'm sure she did the massaging well too, which is important. But I'm praying for this person. So she believes that this can be done in a special way. She believes that God answers prayer. She believes that God hears her in a hairdressing salon. She believes that she doesn't need to see the answer to the prayer. She probably won't. She's not going to spend 10 minutes talking, or 20 minutes, half an hour and a half talking to them at the chair. She may never wash that person's hair again. But God is there. Yeah. God can work.
It's amazing.
So, you know, a couple of examples like that. And I think people begin to go, because often those are not the ordinary stories that we tell. We tell big stories, but not, you know, I turned a team round.
Yeah. And what was your experience of those couple of days in terms of how people engaged with the challenge? And well, there was a lot of collaboration, putting, you know, sometimes quite big groups of people, quite different people in a room to try and, you know, wrangle these songs together.
I thought it was quite amazing. As a closet creative, being with three or four, you know, creative people in a room, and you know, you burble for a bit, and then you just see what somebody does, you know. And somebody said, "Oh, talk to him about sort of somebody in high level in business." You know, I said, "Well, it's the kind of person who makes 90 decisions an hour." You know, these CEOs, and that turns into a line for a song.
Yeah.
You just have no idea. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen. You know, how somebody will pick up a fragment and then. And then that leads to somebody else having a fragment about somebody else in a different context. And boom. So it was exhilarating. And also stylistically it was interesting how people were happy to, in a sense, submit to one another out of reverence out of reverence for integrity music. Or you know, there was that very sweet thing. But it was also, you realise, iron sharpening iron. Now, not all of them were great, you know, but everyone had ideas in them.
Yeah.
And not every song is great, is it?
No.
Not every song is singable.
No.
Or even if it is singable, it's not necessarily singable by a congregation. And not every song do you think, that's going on my next album. But every song had something. And I suppose there was for me, there was two things going on. A, there were some crackers. I mean, and actually... So, you know, I don't want to big anybody up whose house is on the podcast, but the one that you wrote at 6 o'clock in the morning, I don't know, eight line stanzas or rhyming couplets at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm thinking, imagine if you got up at 5. but you know, it was extraordinary how far you can get. And you know, I tend to write on my own.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
But was it very interesting to see how fruitful that was.
Yeah.
And you've also got humility. Because as you said, some of these people are...
Oh, yeah.
...even known to people like me.
Yeah.
You know, they're... And they're sitting in a room with someone who's not got a song on an album yet.
Yeah. And they've got a way of doing it, essentially. They've got what's worked in the past. And there was a sense of, yeah, by the way, what's worked in the past is not what we're doing here, you know, to a large degree. Sure, bring some of those skills, but actually, you know, there was a challenge, I think from Andy Flanagan on the second day, to just really go for it. I think people were trying to sort of hedge the bets a little bit between, oh, here's a regular worship song, and then here's this kind of whole life perspective that we're trying to bring in. And people were trying to do a bit of a hedge for, oh, let's soften that, let's soften that. And I think Andy said at one point, let's not soften it. Let's go for it. Let's have some 100% songs that really... And I felt like on the second day particularly, people let the brakes off,
yeah,
and just went for it.
Yeah, it was a good word, that. It was also, I think, that people were growing into the perspective.
Mm.
They were growing into, you know, they've been living with it. And of course, they had the testimonies of those two politicians. We went to Houses of Parliament, and two politicians talked about the difference that Jesus makes in their lives. One, I think, Labour, one Conservative, you know, in that context. So there was a growing sense of appreciation of the significance of the area, and, you know, and it helps to sleep on things as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, that trip to Parliament makes me think, you know, most people listening to this podcast won't be able to have a trip to Parliament, but actually any conversation with someone in a workplace could make a massive difference, couldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, literally just chatting to someone at church or a home group about, hey, how's it going in your workplace? What are the challenges of being a Christian? What are the opportunities? Especially for, you know, someone like me and you who are spending most of our time actually immersed in the church world, to get that perspective, I felt that that's what that, you know, like the Parliament trip was amazing, but in a sense it was just that push outside of our comfort zone into somebody else's workplace.
Yeah.
And you realise, oh, this is, you know, politicians from both sides, but this is their workplace.
Yeah.
You know, this is their daily challenge.
And I think also, as you know, if you're part of a worship team, it's really one of the things you can do. Most people who are part of worship teams are not part of professional bands, are they?
Yeah.
So whether you're the paid leader or the not paid leader, you can piggyback a text on, you know, I think we'll play this in a different key on Sunday.
Yeah.
To, and how's it been going at work? Or tell me what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
And sometimes what happens, I think, in some church-focused teams is that they focus rightly on the task before them, and there's an opportunity just maybe with the three or four people that you're working with in a church band to find out what's really going on in your life, how can we pray for you beyond.
Mm.
Yeah.
Amazing. So we've now got the album of 8 songs, which I'm very excited about. The album, I think it's fantastic, but I'm imagining that you're listening to it having sort of given your life to this cause, basically, I'm thinking, that's great, and what about this song? Are there gaps still? Are there things you think we can still be writing into? You know, hopefully there's a couple of hundred people here trying to write some of these kind of songs. What could they be writing?
Well, you know, first of all, 8 songs, you know, eight songs is, you know, how many songs are produced every year?
Yeah.
And, you know, you filter out 8, and then you think, how many of those fit different kinds of contexts and so on and so forth. So if we had another 80 songs on exactly the same 8 themes that are in those 8 songs, I'd be very, very happy.
Good.
One level. I mean, I you know, I tend to think about these things in terms of you know, the two types, you know, that I began by talking about, the Psalms.
Mm.
So one thing is, it would be wonderful to have some people reflecting on their own experience of everyday life, work, whatever it might be, and of the emotions and challenges that have come out of that, and then how those then translate out to other people.
Mm.
The strength, obviously, of the Psalms at one level is that David is actually talking about mostly situations that most people don't face, and yet they do connect. You know, most of us are not picking up our physical sword every day, strapping on our helmet and off we go. We may be doing a very good Ephesians 6, the armour of God, but we're not doing that. But actually listening to oneself in one's own everyday context, I think, you know, what's coming out of you?
Yeah.
What's coming out of... Maybe you've got, you know, 9 children under 6, and that's what you're looking after. You know, what's that? So I suppose at one level there's the authenticity of recognizing maybe, as with David, the Lord is teaching you things, is wanting to bring things out about how he's with you here that actually translate for other people how it's with them there.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, oh gosh, it's very repetitive being a mum picking up these clothes 10 times a day. It's very repetitive being a factory doing this 10 times a day. It's very repetitive when a customer comes into the shop 10 times a day asking, you know, where is this? It's very repetitive being on the platform, somebody saying, where is the central line 10 times a day? There's a lot of very repetitive things in life. Lord, be in that. I mean, so I think out of that. And then there are gaps. You know, we don't have, you know, do we have a communion song? Because, you know, it's bread and wine, bread made with human hands, wine crafted by human hands. There is a, there is an interaction between the elements and humanity. And it's very clear in communion. You know, do we have a really, I mean, maybe we do, but do we have a communion song that reflects that? That we're bringing, in a sense, the bread is brought, the bread, the baker baked the bread. You know, the vintner made the wine, or, you know, 1986, Southern Slopes, or the grape juice. So there's that. And I think there are some songs, I think, which are, if you like, I would love to see both what you might call songs of dismissal and the songs of, you know, the opening song. Because I think the opening songs are really, really important, particularly in some traditions, like charismatic tradition, where you know where you're going once you've started. You are going to go down a particular road. But I think some songs which don't either implicitly or explicitly say, leave everything at the door. But rather, bring everything into the altar. Bring it all in. Lord, we bring everything that has come to you. You know, the this, the that, the whatever. And so on. And I think that's helping people frame, recognize that their everyday life, yes, God is going to help them see it afresh, as he helped, you know, the psalmist see, look at the rich. You know, their glossy, shiny bodies and their very nice overshirts.
Mark's looking at me trying to find something to suggest that I'm rich in what I'm wearing. And he's struggling.
Well, I am struggling. The microphone is worth 18 grand. I am struggling. But, you know, so I think that, and then the song of dismissal. How do we send people out? Well. And, of course, challenged in different places. I think, you know, I'm grateful in a charismatic context where there is a, whilst it's great that the worship is going to carry on and, and we're going to carry on praying here, but actually people are sent out. Go now to love and serve the Lord. Whatever it might be, you know, take what you've gone and take it out into the world. I think there needs to be some kind of punctuation. But in other places and other traditions, there is a song of here we go, here we go, here we go.
See? You're not a closet songwriter at all.
Been to too many football matches.
Mark, this has been brilliant. Thank you so much. And I know you've got a conference to speak at, so we're going to, but we could be speaking all day about this. And where can people find out more about LICC or get inspired more about this stuff?
LICC.org.uk. It's got a rich website, lots of free things. Some things to subscribe to, whether that's Instagram or a word for the week or a, something on culture every week. And of course, you know, links into things for your church leaders, some links into Sam and Sarah. It's easy for me to say. Sam and Sarah's books and resources as well. And yeah, I mean, the simplest thing is the website. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Just one thing.
Yeah.
I just want to say that one of the books that might be really helpful to people is a book called Fruitfulness on the Front Line.
Amen.
Which has helped a lot of people see how how you or how the people that you're seeking to serve can be fruitful in everyday life. Very simple framework. I commend it to you, even though I wrote it.
Well, we couldn't have written Whole Life Worship without that. It was that was definitely, you know, that was major inspiration. So thank you for that.
You can take the ad man out of advertising, but he's got to do a plug for his own book.
Exactly. It's a beautiful new edition, right?
There is a beautiful edition being launched today.
Gorgeous.
There you go.
Lovely red cover.
Yeah. Well, branded to the end.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah.